I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am, but Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
This is Internet Marketing.
Welcome, everybody. So, you've got a different person on the line today. I'm Scott Colnup from Site Visibility, Managing Director. And you might be asking yourself, where's Andy? So Andy White has been an amazing podcast host for us for a long time now. But we're making some changes to our podcast with the goal of bringing an even greater breadth of insider tips and advice from our team at Site Visibility. For this reason, within the next month, I'll be taking over full-time hosting duties from Andy. Andy's still got around 3 to 4 episodes to record, so he's not done with this just yet. He's still got plenty of time to enjoy his dulcet tones. But then it will be over to me. So who am I? I've been in the marketing industry for 15 years. I've been on the podcast several times before. And marketing is what I spend my time on from the moment I wake, and it's what keeps me up at night. So I think we're going to have plenty of time and plenty of fun getting to know each other. We're still going to be talking to some of the most respected names in marketing, and we've got some really exciting guests lined up. And you're also going to be hearing way more from our team at Site Visibility on upcoming episodes. And on that note, today my guest is Jason Woodford, CEO at Site Visibility. Jason, say hello.
Hello there.
Hello there. Today, Jason and I will be discussing our journey through COVID-19 so far, how it's impacted our agency, and we'll be sharing the lessons that we've learned. Hopefully, you'll be able to take that advice and apply it to your business. At very least, we think it's going to generate some interesting discussion and some interesting ideas. And Jason, I told you just before we started recording, I have a little treat for you today. Do you want to know what that treat is?
I need to know what the treat is, please.
Okay, so I'm sick, as I think most people are, of certain phrases related to the pandemic. Those include unprecedented times, difficult times, tough times, and the new normal. So we've got to try our very best to get through this episode without using those phrases. Are you up for that challenge?
Scott, I can do that. They're not in my vocabulary.
So the pandemic has affected us all in a variety of different ways. And in the marketing industry, it's been particularly interesting and a very unusual time. And everyone has had to respond in different ways. So we just wanted to talk through how that's impacted our agency to date, some of the very specific tactics that we've deployed, the emotional side, and how that's impacted us, and what we see for the future. So going back to the start, when this started to affect us, Jason, in your opinion, was this something that was an immediate, one day it wasn't there and the next day it affected us, or did you feel like it was gradual?
It's a really interesting question, that, Scott. From our perspective, I think it took place over a few months, but it seems like it was extremely quick. It started back in January, where a couple of our clients who had exposure to the Far East started to report a downturn. And then in the office, we started to use sanitizer in the office, and people were traveling less. And then we started working from home, and then the lockdown happened. And that, I mean, in the terms of the business, that took place over 2 to 3 months. It seems like it was much quicker than that.
Yeah, it's funny you say the you mentioned hand sanitizer. One of thinking back, and I haven't had too much of a chance just being in it day to day, thinking back to the series of events that led us to working from home in terms of the reflection. But I remember one week, Laurie, our office manager, was bringing in Dettol wipes so we can all keep our desks clean and bacteria free and virus free. And the next week, we were all working from home. So I guess for me, I also remembered a discussion that we had in a board meeting, maybe around February time, where you, Jason, said something along the lines of, shouldn't we be paying perhaps greater attention to this? And we all kind of debated that point. And then from there, maybe from early February onwards, that's when it really started to ramp up. But the impact of this, I don't think for us as an agency, has been felt until probably the last 6 weeks. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I would agree with that. The we had sort of concerning conversations with, you know, retail clients who found they weren't able to open their stores or unable to fulfill their sort of online shops, and travel businesses not starting to operate. And these conversations became more frequent and more urgent. And so the impact really, really hit our business in, as you said, in March.
Yeah. And so thinking that through from our communication, so our outbound communication. So we were probably having internal conversations about this back in maybe February through to March. And, you know, it's hard to piece together the story from memory entirely. But I think then we started to have some conversations with clients in perhaps late February, early March about this and how they were planning on responding. So on that note, what can you remember about how we communicated the impact or the potential impact of this with our clients?
Initially, our conversations with clients were more exploratory, I seem to remember, asking them questions around, are they aware of what's happening initially in Asia, and is it having an impact on them? Some of our travel businesses, some of our live events businesses, you know, were and are operating in Asia. So those initially didn't seem to be impacted. However, very quickly they did become impacted, and then it became a revenue issue. So those conversations are mostly by email and telephone, phone calls. You know, our account managers would be talking to our clients personally about what was happening and asking questions about how it's impacting them. And obviously, we're searching for ways that we can help through those conversations. So lots of open questions.
Yeah, I recall something very similar actually, in that I would say from an outbound perspective, we didn't start communicating our plans until maybe mid-March, but conversations with our clients started a little bit earlier. And not necessarily through naivety or ignorance, but I would say that our clients seem to be impacted a bit more immediately by this. And again, our clients range from national to global businesses, so I'm sure they all had different reasons for that. But for some of our clients in particular, it started to hit them pretty immediately, the realization that this was happening. And, you know, for retail clients, stores might be closed, or for the travel industry, that might be kind of shut down temporarily. And then it really, from about mid-March onwards, started to become a bit more difficult. I don't think I felt very early on the need to, either from a CEO perspective or me as a managing director, to provide any external communication or reassurance until we had our plan clear. And then I think we started to communicate that externally maybe after mid-March or around mid-March, probably around the time that we actually decided to close the office. And that was the trigger for us to communicate a lot of changes in our plans to clients. We have the benefit in our agency of having dedicated account managers, and they typically will be the primary points of contact for our clients. So we were able to distribute our message from our board to our account managers, to our clients. And we've actually, another way in which we were able to communicate with our clients, Jason, that I've just recalled, is the offer. I think from around mid-March, when lockdown, I think it was around that time, wasn't it? Lockdown started mid-March in the UK. That's when we started to offer non-chargeable COVID-19 discussions with our clients, where we could just discuss how it's impacted their business, how we could, from a marketing perspective, and even a more general business perspective, our ideas on how they could continue to run their business. And we've had some really enjoyable conversations with our clients around that. And I think that really helped to build trust. And from our perspective, I think another key point is showed our empathy. You know, it wasn't a time for us to try and sell. It wasn't a time for us to panic and talk about contracts. It was really our time to explore with clients how they could remain operational.
Do you know, Scott, those were probably the activities that I was most proud of our team during the process, where, you know, we had some clients who, and some contacts of ours who were really struggling with the impact this was having on their business. And in some instances, it was just encouraging to see a broader openness to other opportunities, to sort of shining a light on a potential way forward when everything seemed so dark. And I felt like that was a great way to get closer to clients and to genuinely help them.
It's interesting you talk about that, because as a marketer, from a marketing perspective, and this is something that I referenced in our newsletter, I think at the end of March, beginning of April, and I thought about this a lot, but I sent a statement to our email subscribers, which include our customers. And one of the lines in there, which I debated a little bit in my mind, was that I was grateful for this time. And that can seem very smug, perhaps very arrogant. And I thought about it a lot. And I was talking from the perspective of the marketing challenge of this. So obviously, I'm not grateful for illness. I'm not grateful for death. And I'm not grateful for the impact it's had on our economy, but I was grateful for the marketing challenge, because I think it's a real good challenge of a marketer's skill, and one of those skills being empathy at this time. And I still believe that. And so you talking about the meetings that we had with clients to explore things beyond our day-to-day contract, items beyond just a marketing discipline, that's been, I think you used the phrase shining light, but that's been one of the my most enjoyable experiences over the last 6 to 8 weeks, is having those discussions with clients and really getting to learn more about their businesses in ways that perhaps wouldn't have happened otherwise. So I agree with that. That's been probably the highlight of my time from a marketing perspective, at least. So this hasn't all been smooth, hasn't all been enjoyable. It's been very difficult. I'm sure you've had a lot of late nights, as have I. We've discussed and got through a lot of difficulty in this period. And this might be a painful point of discussion for us, this next part. But I think this one might be most useful for our listeners. The decisions that we've had to take in respect of our business. So if you could just speak on a little bit of some of the key decisions that we've had to take over these last few months. And I guess how they've impacted you personally as well would be interesting.
Sure. Now, you're right. This is a painful, potentially soul-searching part of a conversation. But the reality, once the reality hit in terms of our clients, where in some cases, in some travel businesses, they found that their revenue was going backwards into negative territory. No, it became pretty clear within weeks that this was going to have a serious impact on some of our customers and therefore on ourselves, whether we like it or not. And regardless of the relationship and regardless of how much money we're making for our clients, it's going to have an impact. And so that impacts revenue and cost, revenue and profit down, and not sure for how long that revenue is going to be impacted. So we certainly had to look at our costs, and we review our costs on a weekly basis anyway. However, this was going to the next level in terms of actually we need to move into cost reduction. And we've got a process in place which, you know, which our finance department has been involved in, where all budget holders have prioritized their costs, and we had to cut our non-essential costs within the business. That extended after a few weeks into looking at non-essential costs, where our revenue has forced a revenue reduction has forced us to look at other costs that could be temporarily removed. And this is where the UK government's rapid and I think generous support to businesses, designed specifically to ensure that redundancies are prevented, have enabled us to temporarily remove some staffing costs from the business. And that has allowed us to continue with a reasonable amount of optimism. So we have had to furlough some staff, sadly, in different parts of the business. And the finance department also looked at the other support in terms of freeing up cash flow. So cost reduction is one element. Second element is cash flow. One part of the cash flow conversation is how can we extend and maximize our cash flow? So looking at ways to extend our payment terms for PAYE, for example, our tax payments, where the government allowed businesses to defer those tax payments, which we did from an organizational perspective. And from a personal perspective, it's also, you know, I've known from way back at the beginning, starting up the business, it felt a bit like startup territory in terms of, you know, you've got to also look at your personal finances. So looking at how, as an individual, I can minimize my personal costs. So it's impacted me personally in terms of taking a mortgage holiday, for example, and, you know, encouraging the kids to just think a bit more carefully about their costs and reducing our holiday expenditure, for example, and those sorts of plans. Because, you know, realistically, none of us really know how this is going to impact us in 6 months' time. So the best thing that we can do right now is to minimize the risk by minimizing our costs. And so that's something that we've done on a business perspective, as well as from a personal perspective. But none of the important thing at this stage is that none of that cost reduction has been a permanent cost reduction. It's been a temporary cost reduction. And again, that's only possible through the way the UK government has supported businesses here in the UK.
Interesting. Yeah, we'll touch on the government support in a little bit more detail in a moment. But you touched on several points there, which I think are interesting to kind of discuss a little bit further. The first is the point about furloughing. Just my observations for this is not just marketing, but there does seem to have been a negative stigma attached to furloughing, when actually, as you just discussed, it's an amazing it's an amazing scheme from the government. And in other scenarios, this would have caused so many companies to have to explore redundancies. And actually, one of the more disappointing things that I've observed was when the lockdown measures were initially implemented, the raft of companies that made some what I consider fairly knee-jerk reactions to make people redundant before hearing the government advice. It was quite disappointing. I'm sure we all had stories and heard stories of companies that had made people redundant that day. So that was a little disappointing. You could argue that perhaps the government should have announced the job retention scheme information a little bit earlier in the process, and that may have avoided some of those early redundancies. But we are using the scheme, we're benefiting from the scheme, and we managed to phase the scheme in our company in a way that made sense. And like you said, before we even utilized the scheme, it was about our first phase was just reducing all non-essential operating costs. So not even staff related first. And looking back on the process that we've been through, I'm actually really proud of how we approached that. I guess our team in the company will be the judge of this, but I'd hope that we approached that in a way that was logical, and we communicated that internally in a way that helped everyone to be reassured. Because the other point that you noted here is, you know, regardless of people's concerns about their day-to-day work life, you've then got all the extra personal finance management stuff to consider. And it doesn't matter your salary. I think everyone is being conscious of the money that they're spending. And so that on top of day-to-day work is really mentally challenging for a lot of people, I think.
Yeah.
So on the point of the government schemes and grants, you talked a little bit about furloughing, but can you talk about other, because there are business loans, furloughing and other options. Can you talk about some of the other options that you've considered and have been exploring?
Sure. Well, we didn't qualify for some of the support that was offered, but what we did and have taken advantage of is the VAT deferment, the VAT value added tax here in the UK deferment, which is a significant sum. You do have to pay it in the end, so this isn't sort of removing that payment. It's just saving that payment for a better day later on. So the job retention scheme, the furloughing scheme that we've discussed, is something that we've used, and have to be said, you know, most of our customers have used as well. We've got some customers with thousands of staff on furlough. So this is where the government is paying private companies the salaries of their thousands of staff. It's quite incredible. And we are exploring the coronavirus business loan schemes and the bounce back loan scheme that was announced just today. And the reason for this is no one knows what's going to happen into the future, and hopefully we won't actually need to use these loans. But I think as a business, you know, you have to put your pride to the side and look at the potential scenarios that you could be entering over the next 12 months. And it's better to have that cash in the business, on the balance sheet, and available to be used when it's needed and if it's needed. And if it's not, we'll just pay it back. But those are the main schemes that we have used. We haven't been eligible for the Small Business Grants Fund. Bizarrely, our office rateable value was too high, and I think we're a classic small business, but we weren't eligible for that. And equally, the business rates relief, which was sad.
But you just touched on a great point as you were talking, from putting your pride to the side. And I think a key message or a key lesson maybe there is that even if you think your business, regardless of size, doesn't need the government support, you should still take the steps to explore the government advice and the schemes available, because we just don't know how long this might continue for. And so it's better to be educated with the options that are available than to not at all. I think that's a really good point that you made as you were talking through. And as you said, pride as well. I think the pride thing impacts furloughing, and maybe that's why there's a little bit of a negative stigma attached to it, you know, to feel like you might have to use the scheme. But it's to keep people employed. It's to keep, and ultimately, if you're keeping people employed and you're making the right decisions regarding cost management, then that should mean that you can continue to operate as a business down the line a little bit further, and ultimately support not only your staff, the people side of it, but overall, if everyone takes that approach, support the economy and the bounce back of the economy eventually. So this is a really difficult question to answer, and you're going to hate me for asking it, but do you think the government support has gone far enough?
Wow, that's a 6 p.m. BBC News question. Thank you, Scott.
I'm not ready for that. Yeah. I'll take care of the podcast hosting first, and then maybe move on to the 6 p.m. news.
Probably not would be the way I'd answer that question. However, and there's a big however, it's quite incredible to see how these really imaginative support packages have been pulled together in an incredibly short period of time. Not only pulled together, but been approved and funded within a matter of weeks. I mean, it's quite astonishing how much has been achieved. And if you compare what we get in the UK, you know, versus what's available in other countries, most notably to our friends in the US, you know, it's quite incredible what they have done. So I think so when it's probably not, because there will be businesses that will go bust, and there will be probably hundreds of thousands of people who will become unemployed over the next few months. Hopefully, we'll all get back into business really quickly. You know, that's consumer confidence, will drive demand, will drive orders for businesses, hopefully UK businesses, and help us get back. But probably not to save everyone, but certainly done more than I would have expected otherwise.
This is a really challenging question to answer. And actually, as I'd written down the question for our show notes to as an outline, I thought, how would I answer this? And
how would you?
Well, the difficult thing is that we have nothing in my lifetime. I have nothing to compare it to. And so sometimes the question, you know, do you think it's gone far enough? You can look at it two ways. You can look at a comparison to a previous time or a similar time that this may have happened. Yeah. Or you can just detach yourself from history and just say, what more did the government or do the government need to do or have they needed to do? And the biggest thing that stands out to me is not for our business, actually. It's probably the freelance support or the self-employment support. That's the area which I think, I mean, just from my circles, that came too late and probably isn't enough or at the same level or as robust as the small business support. So if there's an area that I think could have been improved or maybe still continue, you know, still requires improvement, it's probably the self-employment benefits. That still is a little bit unclear to me. It's very difficult to answer that question. So I appreciate you going through that response. Well, I guess what else would you maybe like to see? Obviously, we can talk about history and what's happened, but what else would you like to see at this point in time? You know, as we're recording this, we're week two, maybe week, I can't even remember what week we're in terms of the lockdown. There's an announcement this week regarding either an extension or continuation. So either an extension or reduction in measures related to the lockdown. What would you like to see next? Where could the communication improve from your perspective?
Great question. I you know, thanks for asking it. I think the most important thing is for us to have confidence, us as businesses, and that's driven from consumer confidence. The consumer in the UK, in Europe, certainly globally, probably is shattered and is nervous and worried.
If you thought the only way to get a more defined jawline with natural-looking results was through surgery, think again. Juvederm Volux XC is a non-surgical injectable gel filler that improves moderate to severe loss of jawline definition and can help you achieve natural-looking results with little downtime. Even better, this improved definition lasts up to 1 year with optimal treatment. No maintenance required. Improve jawline definition for a smooth, sculpted look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
And time will tell when people regain that confidence. However, the biggest thing the government can do is everything within its economic, within its public and social policy armory to restore consumer confidence. And that may be about delaying and furthering the lockdown to ensure that we don't get a second peak. That sounds like sort of sensible plans, but anything to increase the confidence of our customers that it's worth investing in their futures, which of course it is, but any help to ensure that.
So speaking of the future, a lot of people have opinions on where this pandemic might impact us in the long term, but thinking beyond the immediate, so thinking beyond the next 3 to 6 months, are there any thoughts that you've had about how the pandemic might impact businesses or even when it comes to marketing user behavior at this time?
It's really interesting. Something I've thought about recently is how much innovation is taking place right now. How much innovation is being forced? So there's innovation that would have naturally just occurred through timing. However, with the increased pressures from multiple dimensions, innovations will have been squeezed forward and up the pipeline and would have been road tested more quickly. And some of those are going to be successes. There'll be a much more sort of accelerated innovation process. So I think companies that are able to capitalize on those innovations are going to have hopefully a positive experience from that. And something we're really interested in within the business, as you'll know, is looking for new trends and patterns and new opportunities for clients. So I think identifying those and building momentum on those opportunities are important from a business perspective. And it hasn't all been negative from a business perspective. There are some sectors that are growing rapidly. There are some sectors that are just have the right products and services in this current environment. And there are a multitude of research reports out on that. And those will no doubt continue. But there are also some operational things that have been quite fun and positive that I'm sure will impact all businesses in the long term. So if you ever thought that having meetings online was not for you, I'm sure it is now. And those decisions, about working remotely, whether that's a luxury or a necessity, I think those questions around that will have evaporated fairly quickly. Scott, how important do you think it is for us to have a physical office now?
I don't think it's important at all, is the answer to your question. I know I might be alone in that, but I'd agree with you. And actually, I'm going to ask some more questions of you around that topic. But I agree with you about the point of innovation, in that it's very easy, prior to this pandemic, for you to not invest in self-development, to go about your day-to-day business, to get by, and then suddenly everyone has all this time on their hands, and suddenly a lot of people have new challenges. And so you start to, from what I've seen, at least from our team, is a greater amount of resourcefulness. And that's something that I'm really excited by. And maybe we're not seeing the full benefits of it now, but we were talking about the long term. I think right now is the time that people are reconnecting with some of their passions, with time in their hands to think and to act on those things. It's a time for people to reinvest in their mental health, to get their mind in a good space. And so I think the lasting benefits of those practices, hopefully, we'll see some real interesting innovation in the long run. I agree. I think you touched upon virtual meetings and the adaption of offline, particularly event companies who are having to adapt fast. I think perhaps it's causing them to realize that actually this is something that should have happened within their business a long time ago, to have a plan B. And I'm really excited about the future of virtual meetings and what's going to happen in the software space. It's been good. We've used tools like Slack, GoToMeeting. I'm aware of webinar companies using things like Zoom, Crowdcast, and tools like that. But I think there's still a long way to go to make them more enjoyable experiences. And so I'm looking forward to some of the experimentation that goes on those platforms. And actually, another thing is how people are making money from those platforms is an area of interest for me as well. From your perspective, in terms of innovation, as you touched on it, what have been some of the most intriguing innovations or exciting innovations that you've seen at this throughout these last few months?
Well, in terms of innovations that I've seen, one is particularly intriguing, which is e-learning. So some people who've been listening to the podcast for a number of years will remember back in 2006 when it started, we actually had our own e-learning business. And what's been quite incredible is how some of the live online learning experiences and managing virtual teams, sort of training course content that we developed back in 2004, is now more relevant than ever before. And it's quite incredible how sort of e-learning is having a resurgence, a rightful resurgence, just out of necessity and out of the benefits it can bring. So that would be the one standout opportunity.
Yeah. E-learning stands out to me now that you say it as well. I mean, I'm someone just personally that I enjoy e-learning, and I enjoy that element of, you know, video-based learning, take it at your own pace. But I've actually been, you know, one real positive that I've seen are the responses from the e-learning companies. Now, of course, they want to make money, and the commercial aspect of it is that they want to capitalize on a period where people are investing more in their own self-development. But some of the platforms have done amazing things in terms of offering free courses, offering huge discounts on courses, and providing more guidance around the types of courses to take. And I've been really impressed actually at the mental health aspect and the promotion of that from the companies that stand out to me just off the top of my head are Udacity and Udemy. I'm sure there are plenty of others that have done it. Maybe Coursera, I think, I saw this as well. Where they've been creating kind of tracks of mental health or productivity related courses as well, for free or for very, very cheap. So that has been a real positive. And yeah, you're right. In the long run, maybe that will be really good for, I touched on it, for people to reconnect with their passion. So I'm excited by maybe not necessarily the art or the innovation that we see right now, but what might come out of this period in the next 6 to 12 months. So moving on, in terms of everything that we've discussed today, it's a crisis management situation. And we actually, on a previous podcast, we had our partners at Midnight talking about how to communicate in a crisis. And it's easy for me to say this, but I feel like we've done a good job internally and with our clients. But something that stood out to me as we were talking through these notes and just prior to, you know, pressing the record button, is that we don't have a documented crisis management plan. But we've both agreed that we should. Why do you think we hadn't written this down yet, had something documented, and how important do you think that is?
A crisis management plan is incredibly important. So, yeah, I'm surprised we haven't got one documented. However, it depends what sort of crisis you're talking about. If you're talking about a digital marketing crisis online, you know, there are sort of services and consultancy approaches to that. There's also, you know, for example, if our IT system fell apart and we got hacked or the power supply went, you know, we have got a plan to deal with those sort of operational, physical, tangible processes. But when the world economy collapses in 2 months, no, we didn't have that one written down. And the best plan in these sorts of situations, because I've sort of been through three recessions, I think, whilst working at Site Visibility. And the best plan is to be alert to change and to have the decision makers available and able to make decisions on a rapid and evolving basis. And so sometimes I can imagine that if we had a plan written down, would we have stuck to that plan over the last 3 weeks? I don't know. I challenge that. I think there's a case for being dynamic in situations like this. You know, you look at, you know, Darwin's favorite quote, and I will definitely get this wrong, is around, you know, survival is around those that adapt to change most effectively. And I think that's what we all need to do right now.
Yeah, it's, again, part of the reason in terms of some of the format changes and the hosting changes on this podcast was that we can introduce our listeners to what's happening in our business and, you know, tackle some of these difficult questions. And when, again, when I was thinking about this particular question for this podcast, I'm hoping it will not actually help us as well in terms of the things that we need to do in our business and shine a light on the things that we might need to change. I agree largely with what you've said, Jason. I think that would we have stuck to a plan and would we even known how to have produced that plan until this point? I'm not sure that we would have. So much has changed on a day-to-day basis as we're speaking right now over the last 2 weeks. I feel like we're in a better place that we may consider documenting a plan probably within the next 1 month that talks about our ongoing plans for the future for the company and some of the, you know, just writing down some of the key points from our discussions. But you're completely right. Would a crisis management plan have helped in this period? I'm not too sure. We've been working nonstop day and night for the last 2 weeks, responding to, I guess, the emotional side as well, struggling clients, struggling partners, things that we just maybe couldn't have planned for. And perhaps one of the key points when it comes to crisis management planning is, I guess you could argue, is does that disconnect you from the empathy part? Is actually being responsive at this time? And perhaps I'm just justifying it for myself. But by allowing ourselves a little bit of creative freedom away from documented planning for this period, has that enabled us to respond more authentically? I think it has. And that's been a good outcome for me as well. So I guess, would you agree with that point? Do you feel like we've responded authentically? Do you think that that's another key thing that stands out to me, is the being human part? I feel like what these last few months has brought about in terms of what I see is the communication between us and clients and partners. There is much more of a human element to it, discussion.
Scott, you're definitely right. You're definitely right there that it's the most important and most difficult piece. And whether we've done a good job at that, you know, time
will. Let our clients and our team be the judge of that.
Exactly. And I'm sure they will. But we've definitely approached it differently in terms of, I feel that, and one of the advances that we've made with your involvement is the increased transparency and openness. You know, we're discussing things in team meetings and weekly stand-ups or go-to meeting calls that, you know, 10 years ago, we'd never discuss those openly within the team. Not for any negative reason, but we wouldn't have been sort of working out loud like that, to use a phrase stolen from a great Brighton-based marketer called Will McInnes. So I think that the client side is, you know, we definitely have tried to help and had some incredibly emotional conversations, helping clients get down to, you know, finding a viable future for their businesses or businesses that they're interested in.
So moving on to decisions that we're making now. So we are operational at the moment. We're still serving. We're in a very fortunate position to be operating as normal in terms of the services that we provide. At the moment, we are doing a slightly reduced team. What other decisions are we making right now that you can talk through? Again, this might help listeners that are in a similar situation. Things that we're thinking about, things that we're actioning that perhaps we haven't written down in part. We just talked about a crisis management plan, but things that we know we're working on.
Yeah. So in terms of things that we're working on to help the business get back up and running. So knowing that a lot of our audience are agency owners around the world or people in e-commerce or digital marketing. things that we're focused on are, as best as we can, to try to understand where our clients are at and what their risks are, what their opportunities are, and help them amplify the opportunities, minimize the risks. And things that we can do to achieve that, just to name two, are around forecasting. So helping our clients to forecast as best we can, all things being equal, what the business will look like into the future from a digital perspective, and opportunity spotting. So looking for ways to create opportunities or amplify opportunities for our customers.
Yeah. The other thing that I'd add to this is making some decisions with our company about marketing for the future. So we need to think really carefully about our audience targeting, and base that off of areas that just common sense decisions, targeting industries that we have a love for, but that also we know are less risky over this next 6 months and beyond. So I think there'll be some marketing decisions that we take, not necessarily in respect of our services and the services that we offer, but definitely for the types of industries that we target and we choose to work in. We know, and again, common sense, and this is a really difficult situation, but we likely wouldn't go out now and target travel companies because it's so uncertain. Our goal would be for any current travel clients we're working with to help them get through this period, because it's so uncertain that we need to focus all our energy on our existing customers, which is another key point, actually. So I would say that some of the decisions that we're making right now are, you touched on opportunity spotting then, but even more explicitly, I would say that though, like any marketing agency, we're making changes to our marketing and our sales strategy. I think the situation has brought us even closer to our existing clients, and we're able to have discussions outside the realms of our existing contracts. And that's proving really useful because it's mean we're spotting opportunities for other areas of marketing and business that maybe we, you know, those conversations perhaps wouldn't have otherwise happened. I think I alluded to that at the beginning of this podcast as well. So you're over in Eastbourne. I'm right in the central Brighton. And I think a lot of our podcast listeners will know Brighton is South UK, about an hour train ride away from London. In Brighton, it's a real digital hub. I can't remember, was it Silicon by the Sea is maybe the phrase that I've heard thrown around. You know, in the UK, there's London, Manchester and Brighton that stand out to me as marketing and as digital hubs. What impact do you think this will have on our local economy in Brighton?
Well, business landscape in Brighton or the greater Sussex. In past recessions or instances of change, I think the digital part of the community hasn't been massively impacted by a national decrease in sort of economic activity. So hence, you know, in 2008, Brighton's digital community largely got through that post-banking crisis recession, relatively intact. In fact, more businesses were established then. But the business landscape in Brighton will definitely change because if you're thinking beyond business, you know, our leisure economy is enormous in Brighton. And hotels, restaurants, it's what Brighton's famous for. That's going to change. Change to what? Not quite sure. But in terms of the digital community in Brighton, I think there'll be the strength and diversity of our freelancing community in Brighton, which is already an enormous strength, will come to the fore. It's going to be interesting to see how those freelancers work, whether that'll be in collaborative working spaces or whether it'll be from home with the sort of social distancing. Who knows at this stage? Remote working. You know, there'll be many businesses like ours, Scott, who'll be thinking, you know, why are we spending X thousand pounds a month on our office? But, you know, we obviously do need to see each other every so often to re-socialize. But, you know, to operate, we don't need an office. So what's going to happen to all the office space in Brighton? Previously, that was the big thing that was in shortage in Brighton was office space. But, you know, will that continue? And I really hope that Brighton will, and Sussex, you know, we are, there's a lot more to Sussex than just Brighton. As a person who lives near Eastbourne would obviously wants a pitch into the conversation. You know, Brighton and Sussex has got a renowned reputation for innovation, for small business growth, for technology businesses, working with creative businesses and traditional businesses to generate innovation through organizations like Wired Sussex that I'm very proud to be associated with. So I think that continued reputation for innovation, digital innovation, is just going to accelerate.
The freelance point you touched on, I think, is really interesting. From our agency, we know one of the most difficult things ahead for us is winning new business, and that's because in terms of people being hesitant about spending money. And so I imagine we're very well supported. We've got a breadth of experience in our company. We've got different perspectives. We can create engaging stories through those different perspectives and take different angles to win new business. But I imagine it's really difficult right now as a freelancer to win business without that additional support, unless you've got a really good support, a freelance support network. So I agree. I think, what I'm hoping is that particularly locally in a place like ours in Brighton, I would hope there's a coming together between agencies, between freelancers, and like you said, actually co-working spaces, because that's a big thing in Brighton. And for those businesses in co-working spaces to collaborate even more than they're currently doing. I actually don't know what's happening with co-working spaces. I imagine they've been massively impacted by what's happening. So moving away from Brighton and just thinking more about, in closing, some general tips right now. So regardless of the size of business, keeping this fairly general so it can be applicable to any business, what are some closing tips that you can give?
I can share probably five points.
I want more, I want 10.
I'm gonna start with the five. So we've got make a plan. So we talked about that crisis management plan, but the key is keeping it updated. Make a plan and keep it updated. Communication openly and honestly with all of your key stakeholders, whether those be clients or staff or shareholders or financial organizations. So communicating openly. Third thing is help your clients above all else to find opportunities and help to reduce their risks. So this really is about your clients and as well as your staff. And focus on revenue generation opportunities. So whilst there is a huge temptation in situations like this to focus on reducing costs, certainly reduce your costs, but also put equal effort into revenue generation so that you're working at reducing your costs and increasing your revenue. And the last point, as you'd expect from a marketing guy and a marketing agency, you know, don't stop marketing. And this is beyond the passion. There are countless research-based reports and investigations into the financial benefits for those that continue to invest in marketing through difficult situations. So don't stop marketing.
Yeah, I think on that closing point, to discuss that with you, marketing is all-encompassing. So marketing doesn't mean that you necessarily have to be doing tactical things right now. That might not be the right thing to do. Marketing is about research. Marketing is about targeting. Marketing is about strategy. And there are several elements that you can work on right now that will benefit you in the long run. And actually, one key theme that we've just discussed throughout this, which is so important to marketing, and also just to our communication, our relationships right now, which we talked about a little bit before we started recording, is empathy. Now is the time to demonstrate, to practice. I think empathy is a practice, and it's something that you have to continue to work at. Now is the time to seek your own perspective, to do a little bit of self-analysis, to understand that emotions are high, and to lead with empathy, I would say, throughout all aspects of your marketing, internally or externally. Is that something that's come to the forefront for you recently, Jason?
Definitely, and it's been a key message to have empathy, to show empathy, to look for empathy in all conversations, because this is more than a business situation. This is, you know, a global pandemic, and it has life and death situations. So it is beyond business. So you have to have empathy.
Yeah, I think it's a practice, as you've said. So I think it's just something we need to stick at. So, and keep working on. So that is the end of our episode today. I hope you've enjoyed it. Jason, can you tell people where they can find you?
Sure. You can find me at Site Visibility most days of the week. So I'm at Jason Woodford on Twitter or on LinkedIn at Jason Woodford at Site Visibility.
You'll find the show notes and the episode details at sitevisibility.co.uk. And I just want to take a moment to thank you. This was my first episode as host. I've really enjoyed it. I hope you've enjoyed hearing from me. I look forward to your feedback, and I look forward to more episodes in the future. Thank you, Jason.
Scott, it's been a pleasure, and thank you very much.
Brilliant. Take care.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.